Okay, Chevra, good evening. Thank you for coming. We're continuing our summertime series, which is this summer largely about the Mishneh Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Chazon Ish, like the fellows who, so to speak, were the authors of Halacha in the 20th century. That's our basic approach. And last week we focused on the Mishneh Berurah and a bit of his life story. And what we noted with respect to the Mishneh Berurah that was interesting is the Mishneh Berurah was a Jew who was basically a Jew from Vilna. Now, that means intellectually he was a Jew from Vilna. Vilna in the sense of the Vilna Gaon, this idea of learning independently on my own, trying to work through halacha on my own, not having any Rebbe, not being bound by any communal responsibilities, really. Just like the Vilna Gaon never really occupied a communal position, although he was certainly the most respected person in town, and he collected a salary from Vilna. The Mishneh Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, also, he occupied a rabbinic position for a very, very brief amount of time. He hated it. His son tells us in the biography, and he left. And not only did he hate the Rabbonus, when his son was in dire financial straits and needed a Rabbonus, or needed some way of earning money, and he wrote a letter, "Daddy, you know, help me get a Rabbonus." So Chofetz Chaim first says, "You know what, Sepasnisht, how could I get involved, help my own son? People are going to look askance at that, I can't do that." And then the Chafetz Chaim said, "You know, don't take a Rabbonus. I'm going to support you. I'm going to give you a few bucks, and you're going to help me write the Mishneh Berurah." And the Chafetz Chaim's son, Reb Leibel, it says in the biography, Reb Leibel helped the Chafetz Chaim in the authoring of the Mishneh Berurah. So much so, Zot Reb Leibel, in his introduction, that in his biography of the Chafetz Chaim, so much so that you can resolve contradictions in the Mishneh Berurah with an awareness that it was written by different authors. Right? This is called the documentary hypothesis about the Mishneh Berurah. Right? But the Chafetz Chaim, basically, you know, he wrote it. He had different people write different parts. Rav Shecht always used to point this out to us in Shir, in Yeshiva, that certain parts of the Mishneh Berurah are much more cheerful. That's Rav Shecht the word. Than other parts of the Mishneh Berurah. You read Chelek Vav, and he talks about Dalet Minim, and he's being Mefalpa on the Ra'uz and the back and forth, and whether you have Ruboy Mituch Kula, and that's Ki'ilu, you have Kulo and not Kulo, and if one of the leaves falls, like tremendous lumpus he gets into. Other parts of the Mishneh Berurah are really, really, really dry. No? Huh? Maybe it was bipolar. Ken Zine, it's one suggestion. But a better suggestion is that there are different authors. There are different authors of the Mishneh Berurah. Reb Leibel says that based on this, you could understand. Here, let's just turn the second page. We'll deal with the contradiction in the Mishneh Berurah that Reb Leibel himself brings this example. The halacha in Shulchan Aruch is if I cook on Shabbos, it's aser labori lehanos mimeno. It's like four lines on the bottom of the second page. A healthy person, if I cook for a chola on Shabbos, I cook for an old person on Shabbos, a healthy person cannot benefit from it on Shabbos. Aval b'motzei Shabbos, mutter miyad. But on motzei Shabbos, it's mutter right away. The reason is, since the goy, right, the goy cooked beheter, again, a goy cooks for a chola on Shabbos, so a healthy person should not benefit from it. Motzei Shabbos, the healthy person can benefit from it right away. Why? Since the goy, when he cooked on Shabbos, is doing so beheter, so you don't have to wait b'chdei shiyasu, you don't have to wait the amount of time it takes to prepare the food, there's no iser of bishul akum, you could eat the food right away on Motzei Shabbos. That's the Mishneh Berurah in Shin Yud Ches Os Yud Dalet. However, in Shin Chav Ches Os Samach Gimel,
The Mishnah Berurah also talks about how a chol she'in bo sakana is mutter b'bishul akum. If you're an ill person, so bishul akum is permitted for you. Zach the Mishnah Berurah, even though all other yisurim d'rabbana aser for a chol she'in bo sakana, like it says in Yerideya, bishul akum is a different type of eser. V'gam hachola makes a bracha when he eats a bishul akum. T'bet terakach, he's eating kosher food. Okay, a guy cooks the food for you. Ordinarily, when the guy cooks food, the food is treif. But the guy is cooking food for a Jew on Shabbos. The Jew, the ill Jew, is allowed to eat it on Shabbos. Make a bracha, beautiful. Umash nishal motzei Shabbos. Also, afilu l'chola atzmo kevin she'efshalo oz ayidei Yisrael. Hello, good morning, welcome. Right? Zach the Mishnah Berurah in Shin Chafches, that when the goy cooks for a chayla on Shabbos, so it's usur for the chayla to eat that food on Matzei Shabbos. Why? Because Matzei Shabbos already, there's no heter to have the goy cook for you. Matzei Shabbos, a goy could cook for you. The only reason why a goy is cooking for me is because it's Shabbos and the Jew can't cook on Shabbos. But now that it's Matzei Shabbos and the Jew can cook, so then, you can't eat the food that the guy cooked. So it's a beferit, a black and white contradiction in the Mishnah Berurah, no? And it's only 10 simanim apart. Right? And what's Shin Yudchas or Shin Chavchas? What's going on here? So says Reb Leibol, what?
He's talking, he says, like, Tisharas and the Rabbon, also the Chosha Ebo Sakon.
Right?
That's also questionable, isn't it?
That whether no, so in Yerideya Kufnun, in Yerideya Kufnun, hey, we pass on a Yisurim Drabbanan, our mutter for Chol HaShem Bo Sakana. That's what he quotes. That's true. The only thing is, this Isra of Bishul Akum, right, excuse me, ordinary Yisurim Drabbanan, also for Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, but Bishul Akum, he's Mekon. Right? We're only Mekon on Yisurim Drabbanan, Shalok Kederech. No? If it's the normal way, it says in Yerideya Kufnun, hey, we can't be Mekon. There are Yisurim Drabbanan that we're Mekon on for Echola, but Echola can't eat tray food. Echola can't eat food that's tray from a Drabbanan. How can Echola eat Bishul Akum? The answer is Bishul Akum is different. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says over here.
So another Yisurim.
Well, which ones?
The Yisurim Refuah is
doesn't apply for Echola Shem. Yeah, Chazal never goes there, the Yisurim Refuah on Shabbos, Echola Shem. And look, we have certain coolers, but the fact that you can't eat tray food, we're Mekon, right, only by Bishul Akum. That's what it says. But the basic point is, there's a contradiction in Mishnah Berurah as to whether Achola is allowed to eat the food Motzei Shabbos. Now, they now have these Mishnah Berurahs that are printed by the Dirshu group with like the footnote, with the notes on the opposite page. Dirshu, it's wonderful Mishnah Berurah. So the Dirshu Mishnah Berurah points out that Reb Chaim Kanievsky Shlita in the Shona Halachas deals with the stira in the Mishnah Berurahs, and he says that when the Mishnah Berurah in Shin Yudches is Megal, if a guy cooks for a chola, that you can eat the food Matzei Shabbos, that's one about if you cook for a chola, Sheyesh Bo Sakana. When the Mishnah Berurah is machmir that you can't eat the food after, that's one about a chola, She'en Bo Sakana. That's what Reb Chaim Kanievsky says. A beautiful suggestion, but we know the real answer. The real answer is documentary hypothesis in the Mishnah Berurah. The real answer is the official answer in the biography is it's written by two different people. And this is the case he gives. This is the case that Reb Leibel gives of that I wrote, this simon, daddy wrote, that simon, hence there's no stira.
So what's the take home on the food?
What's the take home on the food? So the take home on the food is that it's a machlokas harishonim between the Rashba and the Ra'ah in the Torah's Havayis, and the Chavetz Chaim son said, I felt that you should pass in one way, my father felt you should pass in the other way. What's the take home? Lamaisa? So, one of the dirty little secrets that we're going to get to is, I don't know. One of the goals of learning Mishnah Berurah is, I don't think there's supposed to be a take home necessarily. And we're going to talk about this as we.
You have the question, it's a practical question you want to think
so about. So, sometimes what I could tell you is, some say this, some say that. Now, wait, I know that this bothers you. You want a real answer.
Well, either I want a real answer or I'll
okay, we'll talk about it. Yeah, early.
Were there other noted authors in the biography?
The other sons-in-law?
Oh,
So the Chofetz Chaim's son speaks about three. He and two other sons-in-law wrote parts of the Mishnah Berurah. What's interesting, by the way, in the biography of the Chofetz Chaim that his son Reb Leibel wrote is the one son-in-law who really does not feature prominently in it is my predecessor, no? Reb Mendel Zaks was the Bolchin in Yeshiva. I yarshened his office. This is like Reb Mendel Zaks gave Bechinas in Lyus. I took over from him and like the way that you could say a face that, I don't know, some modern philosopher took over from Socrates. But the fact is... There's a few in between. A couple in between, yeah. Rabbi Peretzky, who was a Talmud of Mendel Zaks, who was a colorful figure, and then Rabbi Shulman, and then me. And that's basically the way it's been in Yeshiva. Now, Reb Mendel Zaks does not make it to the Chofetz Chaim's biography. He's the only son-in-law who does it. He makes it one time. The one reference to him is that when the Chofetz Chaim established the kollel to learn kachim, so he appointed Reb Mendel to be the Rosh Kollel. That's the only time his name is mentioned in that biography. I don't know why. I get the impression that, I don't know if there's bad blood or there are different traditions or something, and I'll tell you the following story. A few years ago, I happened to be at my parents' house in Lawrence on a Sunday, and the minig in Lawrence is that lots of mishulachim come on Sunday. So one of the Zaxes comes to collect money from my father. So I'm sitting over there, and I'm schmoozing with him, and like my father says, oh, you know, this is an Einik called Chofetz Chaim, so very nice. I start schmoozing with him. So we talk about the Mishnah Berurah, and I tell him that, you know, the Mishnah Berurah is written by different authors. The Sotah Kotera that we're talking about, he goes, Chas v'Shalom, you can't say it. The Zayda Alein hat geschriben, Yeder Vart. Right? The Zayda wrote everything. I'm saying, what do you mean? I says in the Bayak, he goes, the Zayda Alein hat geschriben, Yeder Vart. He takes out the Sharblat, the title page of the Mishnah Berurah, and it says, Hu bar me'iti, written by me, Yisrael Meir Hakayan. And he takes out the Sharvlat of the Nidche Yisrael, and it says, Hu bar tachas hashkochasi, written under my auspices. Ooh, ooh. Right? So he's saying it ain't true. The biography, the only official biography of the Chofetz Chaim is Reb Leibel's biography, says that this is true. I don't know. My guess is, and I'm not sure, that there were different traditions or something in the family, or there was something that happened in the family. I don't know. I don't know how to unearth this issue, but this is what I have about the Chofetz Chaim. So now, that's the Chofetz Chaim. Oh, one last point about the Chofetz Chaim very quickly. We mentioned how the Chofetz Chaim didn't like Rabbonus very much, no? So I don't know what you make about this. I found in the YU library last week a book called Bein Shnei Kohanim Gedolim. A book that talks about the relationship between the two Kohen Gadols, as it were, Rav Kook and the Chofetz Chaim. Rav Kook and the Chofetz Chaim had a real relationship. The relationship began when the Chofetz Chaim went from town to town in Europe to sell Svarim, even before he revealed himself. When he was just identifying himself as Moicher Svarim, he went from town to town, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Kook, Rav Kook's father, notices that this Jew selling Svarim, he's not an ordinary Jew, not a Pashat Yid. So he tells him, you stay over here in the Beis Medrash and learn, and I'm going to sell the Svarim for you. And then Rav Shlomo Zalman Kook said, you know what, sleep over at my house at night. So Rav Kook slept in the house. So the Chofetz Chaim slept in the house where little Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kook is a little boy. Years later, that's the first part of their relationship. Years later, Rav Kook marries the daughter of the Aderet. So the Aderet is the Rav in the Mir, no? And Rav Kook married the Aderet's daughter, and the Chofetz Chaim was writing his Sefer Likutei Halachos. Likutei Halachos is basically like a riff on Seder Kodshim. Seder Kodshim doesn't really have halachos for him, besides the Rambam. Chofetz Chaim is writing the Likutei Halachos on Kodshim. Chofetz Chaim needs Haskamas on Likutei Halachos on Kodshim. So he sends the book to the Rav of Mir, to the Aderet, to write a Haskama. At that time, the Aderet's son-in-law is there. Rav Kook had tremendous bekiyas in Kodshim, and the Aderet, the father-in-law, gives the manuscript to his son-in-law and says, listen, I don't have koyach now, I'm too busy. You read it, you write a haskama. So Rav Kook writes a haskama on the Likutei Halachas, which the Aderet was supposed to sign. The only thing is, he wrote such a good Haskah, and he had such wonderful Shtikloch Torah, that the Aderet says, I can't put these Shtikloch Torah in my name. They're too good. So the Aderet in the Haskama points out, and my son-in-law, Avram Yitzchak HaKoyen, the Rav in Boisk, pointed out to me X, Y, and Z. And that's in the Haskama of the Likutei Halachas, which we now know is written by Rav Kook. Great. Years later, Rav Kook had a relationship with the Chafetz Chaim. They were pretty close. They met each other, and the Chafetz Chaim said some beautiful things about Rav Kook. So much so that Rav Kook at one point, this is why I'm telling the story, Rav Kook at one point was thinking about not remaining in Rabbonus. And the Chafetz Chaim told him, no, you should. What's the story? The story is that the Chafetz Chaim has this kachim kaitel. The Chafetz Chaim really felt that when the Jews are kicked out of Moscow, and a lot of them are moving to Eretz Yisrael, they're making Aliyah 1882 and following, a lot of them are making Aliyah. Rav Kook felt, the Chafetz Chaim felt, this is going to be Bias HaMashiach. And if Mashiach is coming, we have to know how to be Makriv Karbanos. So he decided he's going to establish a kailul of 10 people who are going to learn Kachim really well, and they're going to be in his kailul to help bring Mashiach by knowing all the halachas of Kachim. Gevaldik, beautiful idea. So as he's traveling through Europe, on his farm, he's looking for young men to be in this kailul. He meets Avram Yitzchak HaKoyen, who's the Rav in Boisk, and Avram Yitzchak HaKoyen, Rav Kook, he realizes that Ken Kachem. He really knows a lot in Kachem. So at first, the Chafetz Chaim wanted Rav Kook to be part of the Kailal. And the Chafetz Chaim realized that Rav Kook is too good to be in the Kailal. So the Chafetz Chaim said, you should learn Kachem on your own. Just learn by yourself. Learn Kachem, master Kachem. And that's it. Now, 2 days later, the Chafetz Chaim comes back to Rav Kook and said, I changed my mind. I realized that you could influence Jews. And you should be a Rav. You should stay a Rav. You should don't just learn in Kailo. You should be a Rav. That's the story. It's in the letters. It's in the letters of the Chafetz Chaim back and forth to Rav Kook. So even though the Chafetz Chaim did not want his son to be a Rav, he wanted Rav Kook to be a Rav. No, the Chafetz Chaim really liked Rav Kook. The last two stories about the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Kook are a few years later, when Rav Kook is trying to raise some money for the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. So he sends his son, Reb Tzvi Yehuda, and Reb Tzvi Yehuda goes and he meets the Chafetz Chaim. And Tzvi Yehuda introduces him to the Chafetz Chaim. He says, you know my Zayda, the Aderet. Chafetz Chaim looks at him and goes, I know your Zayda. I know your father. Your father is a Himmel Dikayid, he said. He's like a heavenly man. And then, that same year, at a Knesia Gedola of the Aguda, one of the Kanoim got up and said a negative word about Rav Kook. Chafetz Chaim slams down on the shtender and says, you're speaking Lashon Hara about a Yid, a Kadosh, and he walked out. The Chafetz Chaim got along with Rav Kook very well. Now, that is just the basic story about the Chafetz Chaim. Okay, fine. So, let's continue our conversation. Chafetz Chaim, tremendous Jew, wonderful tzaddik, a kadosh gevaldik. He wrote a masterful work of halacha called the Mishnah Berurah, or he supervised the writing of the Mishnah Berurah, as we just pointed out. There's another halacha work that came out roughly the same time as the Mishnah Berurah. The years of the Mishnah Berurah being written, according to most accounts, are 1884 until 1907. That's a long time to be writing the book. But it happens that the Chafetz Chaim published a lot of other books during that time period. Now, I say according to most accounts, Chaim Soloveitchik in Rupture and Reconstruction, in his footnote, he takes the more limited approach that the Mishnah Berurah was written between 1896 and 1907. A period of 11 years rather than do the math. Now, be it as it may. The other work of halacha that's very similar to the Mishnah Berurah in terms of written in the same geographical area and the same basic purpose, teaching Klal Yisrael halacha, is called the Aruch HaShulchan. written by Rabbi Yechiel Mechel Epstein. The Aruch HaShulchan was written, the first volume of the Aruch HaShulchan, I think, came out in 1884. He wrote the Aruch HaShulchan L'Chayshin Mishpat. And the last volume of Aruch HaShulchan came out in 1903. So the books are written relatively the same time. Unlike the Mishnah Berurah that only covers Shulchan Aruch Chaim, the Aruch HaShulchan covers all four volumes of Shulchan Aruch, and the Aruch HaShulchan was much broader than the Mishnah Berurah, much more extensive. Not only does it cover all four volumes of Shulchan Aruch, but it even, like the Rambam, covers the halachas that are not applicable. There's a Sefer Aruch HaShulchan Ha'osir. Right? It's the Aruch HaShulchan for the dinim that will be in the future, about Hakravas, Hakarbanos, about Shemitah and Yovel, etc. That's Aruch HaShulchan Ha'osir. Aruch HaShulchan was Meridik. A Meridik is safer. Really wonderful. The biography of the Aruch HaShulchan, there's a chapter in Mivaloshen Ad Yerushalayim about the Aruch HaShulchan. Rabbi Meir Bar Ilan has about the Aruch HaShulchan. Those are the main things. In English, in 1992, Simcha Fishbein, who is the executive assistant to the president of Torah College, Simcha Fishbein came to him, Simcha Fishbein got his hands on a manuscript of the Aruch HaShulchan and Hilchos Nedarim. The Aruch HaShulchan Yerideya is not complete. There's a few parts of Yerideya that we don't have Aruch HaShulchan on. We don't have Aruch HaShulchan on Simen Shin Lamed Alf and Shin Lamed Beis. Those are mitzvahs HaTzliyos Ba'aretz. That's like Shemitah. That I don't think is such a kasha because we have Aruch HaShulchan Ha'Oser on Shemitah. We don't have Aruch HaShulchan on Yayin Nesach, Stam Yenom, or those Simonim from Kuf Chaf Gimel through Kuf Pei Beis. Well, that void deserves stuff. We don't have Aruch HaShulchan on that. Why not? I'm not sure. Michael Broyd, in one of his blog posts on the Sfarim blog, leaves as an open kasha, how come there's no Aruch HaShulchan on these areas? It seems to me that the reason why there's no Aruch HaShulchan on the Avodah Zarah parts and Stam Yenam parts is that Aruch HaShulchan was scared to death of publishing. If you read the Aruch HaShulchan in his Hakdama, in his introduction, and the introduction to Aruch HaShulchan is on Choshen Mishpat, which is the first volume of the Aruch HaShulchan that was published, he has two pages called Kvod Melech. Two pages where he talks about how wonderful and magnificent the Tsar is. The Tsar is awesome! We love the Tsar! Hip hip hooray! Right? He has two pages about how awesome the Tsar is. Now, why does someone write a few pages about how awesome the Tsar is? Obviously because you are scared to death that the Tsar is going to knock off your head if you write the wrong thing. Now, if there's one area of halacha where I am most scared to death that the Tsar is going to get me, is if I attack his religion. And if I write on Avodah Zarah, I could die. So I'm not going to write on Avodah Zarah. That would be my theory as to why it's not there. The other part of the Aruch HaShulchan that we did not have until very recently is the Aruch HaShulchan Nedarim. And Simcha Fishbein published the Aruch HaShulchan Nedarim, and he published the Aruch HaShulchan Nedarim with a biographical introduction that lasts around 40 pages in English in the back, and that's what we'll be quoting. Now, just one bit of interesting tidbit over here. On the Sfarim blog, and this is found on the Sfarim blog from July of 2007. Apparently some other rabbis also have more free time on their hands in July, so they decide to talk about broad topics. So in the Sfarim blog, July 2007, Eliezer Brut is awesome. He has some really good pieces. So he pointed out that in the first edition of the Aruch HaShulchan, on the title page, it says, these books were brought to print by Bas V'Yoreshes HaGaon HaMechaber, the daughter and the inheritor of the writer, named Bryna Vobrinska. And Bryna Vobrinska tells you how she had a son, one son, an only son, who went to the Bronx, the Medinas America, and unfortunately died young. A terrible, terrible thing. And she's the one who's printing the Aruch HaShulchan. Okay. Interesting, sad. Now, why the Aruch HaShulchan gives his writings to Bryna his daughter to publish instead of his son, Reb Meir Bar Ilan. I don't know. Hey, his son, the Makar Baruch. I'm sorry, he said his son, the Makar Baruch. I'm not sure. What?
The Torah Tumim, right?
The Makar Baruch, the Torah Tumim. Instead of the Torah Tumim, how come he gives it to his daughter? I'm not sure. That's one question. But one little bit of information is that in the first volume that Braina published, she writes that I've already published. She writes that. How's it go? She writes that I published 15 volumes of my father's writings, and I'm looking for funders for 4 more volumes. 3 volumes of Yerideya, and 1 volume in Evan HaEzer. In Evan HaEzer also, we're missing Hilchos Ksubis from the Aruch HaShulchan. We're missing from Samach Vav to Kuf Yud Ches. Now, it seems from that little discovery of Eliezer Brut that, in fact, it was published. Or it was written, I should say, and it just was never published, etc. Just like Simcha Fishbein uncovered Aruch HaShulchan on the Nedarim, which is now volume 9 in the Aruch HaShulchan sets. So also, it's probably out there somewhere. So this is the Aruch HaShulchan, classic, beautiful, beautiful sefer. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan's approach to halacha. Or, first let's just talk about Aruch HaShulchan's biography for a minute, then we'll talk about his approach to halacha, and the two connect, that's like why we're learning tonight. Aruch HaShulchan's biography, he's born in 1829, he's born to a wealthy family. Epstein's is a wealthy family. Epstein claims that their family name comes from Benevesti, which is a well-known Sephardic family name. How Benevesti became Epstein and ended up living in Lithuania, Vesach Nisht. But that's what happened. That's what they say. 1829, he's born from a wealthy family, unlike the Chafetz Chaim, who's not from a wealthy family at all. Fine. The Aruch HaShulchan is born in the town of Babrusk. Babrusk, says Simcha Fishbein in his introduction, is interesting because it's one of the few communities that the Hasidim and the Misnagdim really got along. Oh, okay. Interesting. Now, what about the Aruch HaShulchan? Did the Aruch HaShulchan get along with Hasidim? Or did he not get along with Hasidim? Right, we mentioned about the Mishnah Berurah. He was totally not interested in Hasidim, no? Mishnah Berurah only was selling his books in the Misnagdish areas of Litta. He's not going to the Hasidic territories. Like, that's off limits, no? The one Hasidic practice that the Mishnah Berurah did, I don't know, is at the end of his life he started wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin because he said, I found the Yerushalmi in Kachim says you should wear, says that the parashios should be like Rabbeinu Tam. And then they found that the Yerushalmi in Kachim is a forgery and he continued wearing it anyway. That's just during the biography. But that itself shows he's not wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin for Hasidic reasons that in La'osid Lovo, both Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam are correct. And there's no fights, etc. He's wearing the Rabbeinu Tam tefillin because of Vilna Gaon reasons. Going back to the basic primary sources. He felt Yerushalmi and Kachem as a primary source, then he's proven wrong. Beautiful. Alright, that's the Mishnah Berurah. So Mishnah Berurah is really not Hasidic. Not Hasidic at all. No? Yeah?
He does quote the Shulchan Aruch HaRav.
He quotes the Shulchan Aruch HaRav because the Shulchan Aruch HaRav is a written text of Halacha. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Right? It's a written code of halacha. But it's not particularly Hasidic, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav is basically, we spoke about this last summer, no? The Maggid of Mizrich told the Alter Rebbe that I need someone to write halacha for Hasidim. To help bring Mashiach, you have to write halacha. Now, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav itself was written, and it's very kafuf to the Pesachim of the Magen Avraham, because the Alter Rebbe didn't only want to write a text for Hasidim; he wanted it to be accepted by everybody. He wrote Pesachim in the Siddur of the Alter Rebbe, which was only intended for Hasidim. No, And when he wrote the Kuntres Acharon on the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Kuntres Acharon also is only intended for Hasidim. That's why it's more kafuf to the Zohar, etc. Like in the Shulchan Aruch Harav, for example, when he discusses how many days Yontif you keep when you go to Eretz Yisrael, so he paskins like normal halacha that you keep 2 days of Yontif, no? Kuntres Acharon, right, is more in line with keeping 1 day Yontif, which for Hasidim it's different than for others. That's the basic idea. We spoke about this last summer. We said over Rav Zevin's beautiful article about the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch. No? No. The Mishneh Berurah is not into Hasidim. The Aruch HaShulchan has a real connection to Hasidim. How do I know that? You see, the Aruch HaShulchan's first published work was a book called the Orla Yesharim. Orla Yesharim was a perush on the Sefer HaYosha of Rabbi Nutam. Rabbi Nutam, to quote Dr. Soloveitchik, was brilliant, but he couldn't write. That's the way Dr. Soloveitchik said it. He just sitting there, just couldn't write. He's like all over the place, like his mind working too fast, whatever it is. Now, there are sometimes in the Sefer HaYosha, the Rabbi Nutam, there's like a half a sentence that's really laden with meaning, and you don't know what it means. The Aruch HaShulchan wrote a Perush. His first work is the Orla Yesharim, a Perush on the Sefer HaYosha of Rabbi Nutam. Who wrote Haskamis on the Orla Yesharim? So he has two Haskamis from Rabbi Aaron of Chernobyl and Rabbi Nochum of Chernobyl. Now you should know that Chernobyl is Hasidus that's very close to where the Aruch HaShulchan is living, right, in Bobrusk and then the Vardik. It's the same area. Chernobyl is also the Hasidus that has the most direct line to the Besht. No? The Besht's daughter, Odol, married Reb Nochum of Chernobyl. No? Chernobyl, by the way, is the same nuclear town.
Yeah.
It's there, right? I mean, or it used to be there, whatever it is. But the fact is, that's Chernobyl. If you want to see, you know, birds that are multicolored and everything, you go to Chernobyl, right? Beautiful town. Now, so he has Haskamis from the Rebbe's of Chernobyl, and he has Haskamis from his brother-in-law, the Netziv. The Aruch HaShulchan married the sister of the Netziv. He married, her name is Michla. We do not know the name of the Chafetz Chaim's wife. At least I don't know it. Maybe someone does. What? I don't know. Isn't it a good kasha?
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. I have no idea why. It ain't there. Right?
Are there
I'm sure someone knows the answer. I don't. Right? I don't know the name.
His
mother-in-law. What? Label's mother.
Yeah, the
label.
So
what? No, so it would be Label's mother.
Oh, it's
his
mother.
Label's Chofetz Chaim's son.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Right?
It's
so that'd be the
Chofetz Chaim. Something's never changed.
Label's Chofetz Chaim's son. The Chofetz Chaim had two sons. There was Reb Avram, who died very young. Reb Avram was helping the Chofetz Chaim writing the Likutei Halachos, and Reb Label. Those are the two sons. And he had a bunch of daughters. So the Aruch HaShulchan marries the sister of the Netziv. He has Askama from the Netziv. The Aruch HaShulchan originally, as a kid, learned in his town of Bobrusk, in the Beis Medrash. Then he went to Yeshiva for a year. He went to Volozhin. 1842, 1843, he's in Volozhin. The Mishneh Berurah never went to Yeshiva. No? Chofetz Chaim never went to Yeshiva. Chofetz Chaim didn't have any Rebbeim. The Aruch HaShulchan had Rebbeim. There was a Rav in Bobrusk whose name was Rav Eliyahu Goldberg, who the Aruch HaShulchan was very close with. That was his Rebbe. He had another Rebbe, a Hasidish Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek of Lubavitch. The Aruch HaShulchan traveled to Lubavitch to get smicha from the Tzemach Tzedek. So what we have with the Aruch HaShulchan is a Jew who is both into Hasidim and Misnagdim. I have no evidence he's into Hasidus as a study, but Hasidim, right, he's into. And he's clearly a Litvak. He's a Rav of Nevardik. Right? Not only is he the Rav of Nevardik, like the Aruch HaShulchan, like the Mishnah Berurah built a yeshiva in Radin. The Aruch HaShulchan himself did not build a yeshiva, but it was a yeshiva in Nevardik. Right? The altar of Nevardik was Rabbi Yosef Yoizel. He wrote the book Madrigas HaAdam. The high school that I went to was an intellectual descendant of Nevardik. Rabbi Yechiel Pered, Rosh Yeshiva Far Rockaway, is somehow a great-grandson of Rabbi Avram Yafin, his wife. It's called Derech Eson. Yeshiva Far Rockaway is called, it stands for Avram Yafin Talmud Nevardik. That's what it stands for. So Nevardik, the yeshiva, in the town of Nevardik, the Aruch HaShulchan is a big fan of the Nevardik yeshiva in his hometown. He gets 35 gedolim to write a letter to support the yeshiva of Nevardik in Nevardik. Included in those list of gedolim, just to get a sense of how broad the Aruch HaShulchan was, he connected with those Rabbonim who weren't connected with most other people, Rav Kook, the Rav in Boisk, and Rabbi Rhinus, the Rav in Lida. Rabbi Rhinus is a Mizrachist through and through. Right? The Aruch HaShulchan was connected also to another big Mizrachist, Rabbi Yeshua Leib Tsirilson, who was the Rav in Kishinev, no? This, he was killed in the Holocaust, yeah. Maybe sure, like, Cyrilson. Many names were named after women. Yeah, like Cyril, yeah. Now, Aruch HaShulchan has Rebbeim. Mishneh Berurah doesn't have Rebbeim. Aruch HaShulchan is a community Rav. First, he's a community Rav in a town called Novogrodsk. Then he's a town of Nevardik, whatever, different, here. Novoslibyov is his first town, however you pronounce it. The next town that he's the Rav of is Nevardik. He's a community Rav. Mishneh Berurah is not a community Rav. Now, this reflects itself, both of these points, in my opinion. Having a Rebbe and being a community Rav reflect themselves in the way you go about Paskin and Kalacha, no? You see, if I am a town's rabbi, don't tell people in Mount Sinai that I'm saying this, but to a certain extent, you don't really have that much freedom and leeway, no? You can't get away with everything. You can't get up and say, we're going to change every practice because the people are going to take their esrogim and stone you. Right? You can't do that if you're a community rabbi. But if I have no official position, I could get away with a lot more, no? The Aruch HaShulchan, as a community Rav, could get away with a lot more than the Mishnah. The Aruch HaShulchan could get away with a lot less than the Mishnah Berurah could get away with in terms of being kafuf to minhagim. The Aruch HaShulchan's approach in halacha is different than the Mishnah Berurah's insofar as the Aruch HaShulchan begins a topic by quoting the Gemara and the Rishonim who write on it, and then he gets to the Minhag. And when the Minhag is... What?
The Mishnah.
He starts at the Mishnah, starts at the Pasuk, he goes through the whole line. It's a beautiful sefer to read because it gives you the whole trajectory of halacha, but he always deals with the minhag, and when the minhag seems to be against the halacha, most often the Aruch HaShulchan tries to use a creative way to defend the minhag. The Mishnah Berurah, as a student of the Gaon, into primary sources, back to the basics texts, right? Mishnah Berurah says, oh, minhag, Gemara, fife on the minhag, get rid of it. I don't need that minhag, right? That's what the Mishnah Berurah is doing. And therefore, the Mishnah Berurah will give you lines like, don't rely on Erevin. No, 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 because most Rishonim hold that if you have a street that's 16 amos wide, that's a real Rishus HaRabim, and you really shouldn't have an Erevin. Mishnah Berurah will say that. Aruch HaShulchan will say, Erevin! We've been building Erevin for hundreds of years! Gevaldik, beautiful, minig, minig, minig! Mishnah Berurah would probably say, minig! Has the same letters as Gehenim! Right? That is the big difference between the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah, which is a basis of minhag. If I go back in history and I'd be a student of Jacob Katz, I would tell you that Ashkenazic Jewry traditionally is very bound by minhag. Right? Sephardic Jewry tradition is less bound by minhag. The Vilna Gaon was not really bound by minhag. In part, he had no communal role. In part, his derech halimud. In part, his personality. But the fact is, this is difference number one between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan. Is about minhag. Frida?
I never looked at it that way before, but sometimes it occurs to me, if the person comes in involved, everyday people, the community, he may get some of those purest edges worn off because he may see what life is really like for the 100%.
Have perhaps a more 100%. That's another way of saying that. Yeah.
Would you say that the is similar to the Mishnah?
No. No. The Chaya Adam, again, I feel uncomfortable speaking about the Chaya Adam in the presence of Dashiell. But the Chaya Adam is more in line with the approach of halacha taken by the Vilna Gaon, who's his Mechutin. Although the Chaya Adam's style of writing is different than the Gaon's. But the Derech and learning is probably more similar. The Chaya Adam was not known to be a Megal by any stretch. Now, is chumrah and kula, okay, let's talk about these words. I don't like the words chumrah and kula. Because some people say, oh, the Mishnah Berurah is always so machmer, the Aruch HaShulchan is always so mekel. First of all, it's not really true. I mean, I could find your chumrahs in the Aruch HaShulchan, and I could find your kulas in the Mishnah Berurah. The whole hakdama, the Mishnah Berurah, that I give you on the next page, talks about how you shouldn't have too many chumras. And in the biography of the Chafetz Chaim, they say that he himself in his private life had many, many, many chumras. But when he wrote the Sefer, he gave so many kulas. They write about the Mishnah Berurah like he's the biggest megal. There's a book that came out in Oakland in the 1920s by a Rabbi David Miller. The man was a tremendous tzaddik. And he was a tzaddik because Rav Kook called him a tzaddik. Rabbi David Miller was encouraging people to build mikvahs in their own home because women weren't using mikvah. He was a plumber by training. He had this whole idea they could build like a bathtub, only slightly larger than the average bathtub, and that's going to be a mikvah. And he was mikvah that may ha'ir, beautiful sefer. In that book, he has a whole attack on the Aruch HaShulchan. He's such a machmir. The Aruch HaShulchan gives you shirum for mikvahs. They're so big. The machmir that Aruch HaShulchan guy is. I'll show you a mikvah. Take a thimble. That's a mikvah. Yeah. Right? In other words, what I'm bringing that out is that Reb David Miller from Oakland, 1929, is saying, right, let's reach Sheridan Boulevard in Oakland. That's where he lived. Right? Wherever that is. So Reb David Miller is saying that, you know what? Aruch HaShulchan is too machmir. So I don't want to use words like chumrah and kula. I don't want to have that conversation because I think it's just inappropriate. It's a silly way of looking at halacha. Yeah. I also think that the conversation that many people have about how should I paskin? Should I paskin like the Mishnah Berurah? Or should I pass on like the Aruch HaShulchan? And I think that's a silly conversation also. Because how do I paskin? It depends on which sugya. It depends on what dinim it is. It depends on what each one is saying. Sometimes I pass like the Mishnah Berurah. Sometimes I pass like the Aruch HaShulchan. It depends who makes the most sense. No? Why should I, to have rules, I pass like the Mishnah Berurah or the Aruch HaShulchan? Aruch HaShulchan, that just shows that you don't have no idea how halacha works. Right? Anyone who wants to come up with rules that, oh, we paskin, it seems to me that people like this, Mr. Brownstein, David sent me a link to the Yeshiva World News coffee room, a discussion, very high level discussion over there, about who we paskin like, the Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan. That's silly! The whole thing, that's not the way halacha works! Yes, so there's a bas call that came out. Okay, Zolzain, I have not heard any bas calls.
Your, rules of Pesach.
There are no rules of Pesach in the Torah of Achronim. There are no rules of Pesach.
In Mishnah and
Gemara, there are rules because Ravina and Ravashi, Saifara, they have traditions going. Yeah, fine. Helps a couple of the Bible. Most of the rules you should know. If I guess I'm not in the base mention, so I can say most of the rules of Pesach that are found in the Gemara are not from the Gemara. Most rules of Pesach in the Gemara are from the Rabbanan Savuroi. No, this is not my chesh. Tosis points this out. Tosis says a hilchos hakavos of Abaye b'yal kigam is not a Gemara. It is Rabbanan Savuroi. No, Tosis in Kedusha Nun Beis.
What? Quoted
it's quoted in Gemara, but not everything that's in Gemara is Talmudic. The Rabbanan Savuroi edited the Gemara. We know nothing about the Rabbanan Savuroi. Mamish nothing. But we do know that, I mean, the Rishonim point this out. The Ritva in the first daf of Kedushin tells us that, like, the first daf and a half of Kedushin isn't Gemara. It's Rabbanan Savuroi, no? And they, it exists. Tosfos says this. Tosfos says, Hilchos HaKavos HaDabai B'Yal Kigam is Rabbanan Savuroi. People sometimes make mistakes about how they think halacha works. And one of the, here, I brought a book over here by Rabbi Ari Enkin. Rabbi Ari Enkin is the money changer in Ramat Beit Shemesh. So, when I was in Ramat Beit Shemesh for Bar Stam Mitzvah 2 years ago, so we changed money with Ari Enkin, Gevaldik. Very fine fellow. He says, did you see my Sfarim? I'm like, not really, no. So he gives me a Sfarim, he sends me a Sfarim. Then he got me to write a Haskama on the back of one of his books. I have a Haskama on Ari Enkin's Sfarim. So Ari Enkin's book, Elo Ve'elo, page 220, he quotes a whole bunch of people who talk about who you should paskin like Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan. And he quotes that Rabbi Yehuda Henkel, Rabbi Herzl Henkel quotes from his grandfather, you should paskin like the Aruch HaShulchan, not like the Mishnah Berurah, because Aruch HaShulchan is a community rov and the Mishnah Berurah isn't. I don't think just because someone's a community rov, you paskin like everything they say. I mean, I hope not. I hope not, right? Others say they quote the Rav Moshe Feinstein used to say that we pass like the Aruch HaShulchan over the Mishnah Berurah because the Aruch HaShulchan is Basra. The Aruch HaShulchan wrote after the Mishnah Berurah. At least the Mishnah Berurah Chelek Aleph is quoted in the Aruch HaShulchan in a few places. And the Aruch HaShulchan quotes it to disagree with it. That means that he knew the Mishnah Berurah and disagreed with it. Now, the rule of Hilchos HaKavos
Moshe also is very old. Moshe asks a lot more questions on the Mishnah Berurah than he does on the Aruch HaShulchan.
But I don't think there's any rule that Moshe paskin like the Aruch HaShulchan, the Mishnah Berurah, is a matter of course. I can't imagine any serious posek would take this approach. It seems to me like this is all silly. But what I can tell you is that the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah are works that are doing something different. The Mishnah Berurah is a commentary on Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah Berurah's job is to quote all of the written literature on the topic. The written literature. And that means, by the way, written literature in the terms of Magen Avraham and Taz and Prima Godim. He tells you in this introduction, no, that learning Torah is the most important mitzvah. And learning Shulchan Aruch, learning Halacha Maaseh should be the most important thing. But Shulchan Aruch is a very hard book to learn because you can't learn Shulchan Aruch because you have to know the Torah. And you have to know the background. So he says, I'm going to give you the background material. And it's very hard to come up with Halacha Maaseh when you learn it because you get so confused. The Magen Avraham says the Taz says this, the Matthew says the Shekel says it, Prima Godim says that. I get all confused. Right? You get all confused, so what do I do? So Mishnah Berurah says, I'll give you a digest of what everyone says. Sometimes the Mishnah Berurah tells you his opinion. Not always. Sometimes the Mishnah Berurah tells you his opinion. Not always. Now, what that means is the Mishnah Berurah's job is a digest. His goal is to make learning of Shulchan Aruch easier. Aruch HaShulchan is not there to tell me how to learn Shulchan Aruch. Aruch HaShulchan is there to teach me the sugya. Starting from the Gemara, going straight through. It's not about learning the Shulchan Aruch and the page. That's why Rabbi Rosenzweig pointed out to me when I was in the Kol HaElyon, he said that, I was very into learning Mishnah Berurah. For a few years I wrote like that's something learning Mishnah Berurah, but his commentary is that if you learn Mishnah Berurah, you have to learn it carefully. Which means look for what the Mishnah Berurah doesn't quote. If the Mishnah Berurah doesn't quote the Magen Avraham, that's significant, no? Because he tells me he's supposed to quote every Magen Avraham. If he doesn't quote it, Yesh Dvarim Begav. That's got to be real. No? That's the way to learn Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah is a digest. Now, A few points about the Mishnah Brura, general points. I don't know if we're going to have a chance to go through the specific sources that I have over here just because time is late, but one or two general points about the Mishnah Brura. To my mind, the biggest chiddush in the Mishnah Brura is, or let's say it like this, in yeshivas today, it's accepted that you learn Mishnah Brura, you don't learn Aruch HaShulchan. Why is that true that the Mishnah Brura became the Sefer HaLimud in yeshivas? Not sure. A few suggestions are made. Some suggest that's because the Mishnah Brura, the Chazon Ish in one of his letters calls the Mishnah Brura the Posek Achra. And Rabbi Aaron Cutler said that you should learn Mishnah Brura. Rav Schachter told me that he didn't have a set of Mishnah Brura until he got married. Someone bought him a set, I forgot who, someone bought him a set of Mishnah Brura as a wedding gift. He learned Chaya Adam as a kid. His father used to say Shirin Chaya Adam to Minchan Ma'ariv. Right, Mishnah Brura, again, the way Rav Shechter says that, the only reason why Mishnah Brura is popular in our yeshiva is because Dr. Belkin, Zechron Levrach, is a Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim, and Mendel Zach is a Chafetz Chaim son-in-law. So they introduced you Mishnah Brura to YU. But Mishnah Brura shouldn't really be the Halacha Sefer. In other yeshivas, Mishnah Brura is really accepted. Based on the Chazon Ish, Rabbi Aaron Cutler, it's really the accepted work in Halacha.
That's probably one other reason, too. The Halacha Shulchan is... If you have a
Shulchan
Aruch that has 10 seifim, the Aruch Hashulchan may have 50.
25, right. And the Mishnah
Berurah
is... I want to talk about that point in a minute.
Yeah.
But that's one reason why some say the Aruch Hashulchan is less accepted as a sefer of Lima in the Mishnah Berurah. Others say it's because the Mishnah Berurah's inclination to Chumrah, which we spoke about beforehand. Some say the inclination to Chumrah, they quote this from Rav Henkin also, is because the Chafetz Chaim is the Tzaddik Hadar, and if you're too much of a Tzaddik, you can't be a Posek. I don't get it. I don't fully get that, because I think if you're a real Tzaddik, you understand people also, and you understand that you can't impose on them. That's exactly what the Sun writes in the introduction. This whole tradition for Rav Henkin, I don't fully understand. But it seems to me that the reason why the Mishnah Brura is so well accepted is because it's a really good work. Now, what do I mean by it's a good work? The Mishnah Brura is divided up into three parts. You have the Mishnah Brura, the Bir Halach, and the Shaar Tzion. The Mishnah Brura is like what we mentioned before. It's a running commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, and he tells you the Magen Avraham says this, and the Taz says that, and the Prima Gadim says this, and often he's Machriya, sometimes he's not Machriya. Right, between them, etc. And how's he machri? Is machri? Well, the Chaya Adam, or the Shochan Acharav, from the later poskim paskim like the Magen Avraham over the Taz, or he'll paskim the Magen Avraham over the Taz. That's easy. Right? He's quoting the other Svarim. His job is to quote the literature. The Bir Halacha's job is to expound on it. The Bir Halacha writes essays, and he tries to bring rayas, and he lines up the Rishonim, and it gets very cheerful. Now, that style of having two parts, a shorter part of explanation and a larger part of elaboration, that style was known before the Mishnah Brura with works like the Nesivos, no? Rabbi Jacob Loberbaum wrote the Nesivos, classic sefer, 19th century work, Chayshad Mishpat, he wrote the Chavastas and Yeredeya, Gevaldik, and the Nesivos has two sections. There's Chidushim and Biurim, no? Chidushim are the shorter dinim, and the Biurim are the longer elaborations going through the sugya, very similar to what the Mishnah Berurah does in Mishnah Berurah Halacha. But the biggest chiddush of the Mishnah Berurah is the Shaar HaTzion. Shaar HaTzion, ladies and gentlemen, are footnotes. I am not aware of any Halacha Sefer before the Mishnah Berurah that had footnotes. I went to the library to take out Tony Grafton's book on the footnote. He doesn't deal with Halacha. Who wrote footnotes as a work of halacha? I don't know. But it's brilliant. It's a brilliant idea, because there are little comments in the footnotes. Sometimes, I didn't quote this Magen Avraham. An example, the Magen Avraham says that a person should fast not only the 17th day of Tammuz, but the 9th day of Tammuz also. Because, right, Bayis Rishon, right, was the walls were breached on the 9th day of Tammuz. Magen Avraham says you should fast. Mishnah Berurah in the Shaar HaTzion writes, I didn't quote that Magen Avraham. Look in the Piskei Tshuva who rejects it. A little note, that type of footnote, little comment, is what makes the Mishnah Berurah such a good work. Because the commentary is readable, and if you get really into the sugya, you read the footnote, you get an extra knach, right? It's really good. It's a really well done work.
That's why the Mishnah Berurah is accepted. Now, where are the Chafetz Chaim? Rabbi Schneiman asked me this question a few weeks ago. Guys, where did the Chafetz Chaim get the idea to write the footnote? I have no idea. If anyone can help me with this, it would be wonderful. I need to know this answer. Where did he get the idea of writing a Shar HaTzion? It seems to me that's the most novel concept of the...
Almost every phrase he writes, he feels he wants to quote a source.
Right. So I'll say it like this. They quote from a Yaakov Kamenetsky, a tradition, that sometimes the Mishnah Berurah quotes the sources in the Mishnah Berurah itself, and sometimes he quotes the sources in the Shar HaTzion.
Right.
He says that if he quotes the source in the Mishnah Berurah, that means he doesn't hold of it. If he quotes in the Shar HaTzion, he does hold of it.
Uh-huh.
That's what Yaakov Kamenetsky is quoted as saying. I don't know where you have these traditions. Rav Scheinberg had lots of traditions about how you go about reading Mishnah Berurah. I don't know. All these things, especially if we take the approach of Reb Leibel, his son, that there are many different authors. I don't know if everyone had the same types of rules. Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky was writing into rules. He told Reb Chaim Volkum, we start writing the Bnei HaShulchan, try to be machriya every shayla. Model yourself after the Mishnah Berurah. By the way, it's a great idea. If anyone wants to really get a sense of whether to learn halacha properly, I tried this at one point in my life. Take a siman in Shulchan Aruch, learn it well, and try to write your own Mishnah Berurah. And see where you're going to be different than what the Mishnah Berurah did. I did this when I was in Eretz Yisrael once. It's like an experience, no? Yeah, have fun with it. But, okay, whatever. There's a lot more to say on these topics. I'm not sure, maybe next week we'll talk a little bit more about the Mishnah Berurah before we get into the Chazon Ish. Thank you for listening, Chevra. Have a good night.
Yeah.